Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. Head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch. I'm Andy Bueller, a high school sports reporter with Scorebook Live, and this is Scorebook Live Today, a podcast about high school sports in Washington and the people who play them. It's Thursday, September 19th. It's week three of the high school football season up here in Washington, and we've got a lot to talk about, particularly a couple of big win streaks within the state that ended, a win streak and a loss streak. I'm joined, as usual, by Scorebook Live colleagues Todd Millis in Tacoma and Dan Dickow in Spokane. How you guys doing?
Things are good. I'm enjoying fall sports season.
I'm at the golf course looking out at the ninth hole of the public golf course right by my house. It's the last nice day that we're going to get out here, and it's 70 degrees, so might as well take advantage of it because now we're starting to feel some of that fall in the air.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. So last week, week two of the high school football season, we saw two big streaks end. The longest win streak, which was 28 games, was held by 2A Hawkinson, who is the two-time 2A state defending 2A state champions. They lost to Archbishop Murphy at home to snap that streak, and the all-time or the biggest loss streak in the state was 21 games that was held by South Kitsap. They won their first game in a few years. Todd, you caught up with both programs. What was your impression from how both teams were moving on from two kind of monumental results in their own ways?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about two coaches on the opposite ends of the spectrum. You know, I think Rick Steele and his team was a little bit of shock. He said he admitted that some of his players had never lost, didn't think they were ever going to lose. So it was a shock to their system, a wake-up to their system. But, you know, after a couple of days, he talked to them one by one on Monday and said, "How'd you sleep?" And he said, "Not," and they all answered, "I'm not very good." I think they're motivated to get a new win streak going and get that third state championship. So this might be the wake-up call that the Hawks needed. You know how it is. You win so many games in a row, you just almost feel invincible. So as he said, they feel maybe a little more mortal this week than they did last week. And then on the opposite end, you know, South Kitsap, and to kind of bring into some state history here, South Kitsap in the 80s and 90s, in late 70s, it was as good a program as there was in the state. People were afraid to play them. You know, they had a 23 or 24 game winning streak going on, and for them, the largest school in the state to go on a 21 game losing streak like they did is one of the most unbelievable things I've ever experienced or tried to believe in 25 years being a sports writer here. And so Dan Erickson came on board and tried to plug into their past and got a bunch of the old coaches back on board, and they didn't win week one, but they won week two in their home opener in Port Orchard. And as you can imagine, and a lot of emotion from students and parents and coaches and teachers just sort of spilled over. They stormed the field there in front of their old legendary coach who had the stadium renamed after him, Ed Fisher. So, you know, it was quite a Friday night. And if you were in either one of those stadiums, you probably experienced something into electricity that maybe you hadn't on a normal Friday night.
Todd, yeah, you have your story that you wrote is on scorebooklive.com/Washington. Last Friday, Jeff Graham of the Kitsap Sun was at the game, and he was live tweeting kind of the scene after the game. You know, a lot of tears, and it was really cool to follow along. But I want to focus on the win streak first. A lot of good programs can put together a lot of wins over the course of a season, over the course of multiple seasons. Programs with a lot of talent, but it takes something else to be able to not forfeit a loss. Dan, have you ever, in your experience, been a part of a team that has put together a long win streak like that, and what went into it?
Yeah, I've been on a couple teams that have gone on, you know, pretty long win streaks. One of them was in high school, my senior year at Prairie. I believe we lost the first game of the year, and then I think we ran off 18 in a row until we lost the final regular season of the game against Hudson's Bay in a low-scoring game. I still remember it because it was a loss that stung. We wanted to have an undefeated league season that year, and we couldn't do it. And sometimes it's through no fault of your own. You know, we had great chemistry that year. We had a great culture that was built up. But we had an injury to our big man, Zach Gord, who ended up having a nice college career at Gonzaga. And so we weren't at full strength, and so we lost that night. But he got back, and we got ourselves righted. And the very next week, we won the district title, and then we got up to the state tournament and had a nice showing. I had one of those in high school, and then at Gonzaga, we had a couple nice long winning streaks. And really, you know, what happens when you're in a program or on a team that gets on a run like that is it just feels like you're all on the same page. You're all playing collectively for one goal. Whether or not one person is statistically standing out or getting more attention, everybody's on the same page, and you're playing for the same reasons. And everything seems to click. And so, you know, Hawkinson has obviously had that over the last couple of years. Being from Southwest Washington and knowing that community a little bit, I've heard a few things about that football program in recent years, and from all accounts is they've got great athletes, but they've also got really good leadership. And those are things that can kind of, I don't want to say right the ship after one loss, but, you know, help them turn the page quickly and get back on track on the winning side.
No question. On the South Kitsap side, this quote in Todd's story that Todd was told by South Kitsap coach Dan Erickson, who's their fourth coach in 4 years, he said, and this is, I'm reading from Todd's story, he said, "You know, I was the stranger standing in front of them a few months ago asking them to trust me, even though I was their third head coach in 4 years. Those seniors have been through a lot, so it was pure emotion." That quote really struck me just because, you know, it's got to be when you're in a place that low, it's got to be tough to be motivated. They're just building a program culture from a place where there's not much there. That must be difficult. Dan, I mean, have you ever inversely been a part of a team that was trying to put something together, not just from a wins and loss perspective, but building a program culture?
Yeah, it's at a different level, though, in the professional level. My third season in the NBA, I finally had a chance to be on a really good team, the Dallas Mavericks. And you're in an organization that you've got great ownership in Mark Cuban, great leadership with the front office, Donnie Nelson, the coaching staff, and then players like Dirk Nowitzki and Michael Finley, and obviously Dirk will be a Hall of Famer, but there was kind of an expectation set of how you do things, and that you don't accept anything less than being very good. So started off the season there, and within about 6 weeks, I got traded to New Orleans, right in the midst of New Orleans being in, I believe it was a 15-game losing streak. So New Orleans had high hopes. They had a couple injuries to start the season, and then they just went on a horrendous losing streak. I got traded to the Hornets during the middle of that losing streak, and just showing up to that organization and being around practice early on, you could tell the vibe, the culture, the atmosphere was much different than what I had just came from in Dallas. Now, it ended up working out great for me personally because I had my best year as a professional. But again, it's kind of that whole setting of expectations for a culture of not accepting losing and having, you know, leaders. At the high school level, you'd be looking at your upperclassmen. Same in college and in the professional ranks, you'd be looking for leaders who are veterans, who've had success before and that are willing to share the ropes with the younger guys.
Todd, in talking to South Kitsap, what was it about Coach Erickson that you felt like really stood out to you and about kind of his ability to lead the team and bring something different for that program?
I mean, he's done it before, first and foremost. He's an old Shelton guy, and he took over at at Plahalia. That was a school that was on a long losing streak when he got there, and found a way to snap that streak. He says he's had two Gatorade baths in his coaching career, and both of them came after snapping long losing streaks. So, I mean, you have a guy that's positive, that brings energy, that has focus. You know, just listening to him, it's easy to understand how these guys, even in an early stage, had gotten behind him and believed in him and said, hey, we're not only going to get this monkey off our back, we're going to start winning some football games at South Kitsap. And they did that convincingly against Rogers. And, you know, you can hear it in his voice. This is step one. Now let's put a winning streak of our own together, or let's win a few games this year. Let's get a building block there going. So, there aren't too many football coaches I've talked to in 25 years where you feel like you want to, you know, run through the phone and kind of play your own brand of football for them. And then that's kind of what happened when I talked to Dan. He was very positive and very energetic and very emotional. This is, you know, football coaches sometimes have the reputation of being stoic. All that sort of is sort of raveled up into one guy. He's a really positive, emotional, hyper-focused guy, and it's easy to see why this program didn't waste very much time to break
the Moving on to our second topic of the week, and this is a bit of an odd one. In Arizona, in the Tempe Union High School District, they just finished a 3-week investigation into an email account that belonged to a high school girls varsity basketball coach who had allegedly been sharing game plans, play diagrams, insider information to opposing coaches in both football and basketball going back to 2017. It's been a big breaking story down in Arizona, and the reason it ties up to the state of Washington is that one of the programs that had been mentioned in the initial reports were Pinnacle High School in Phoenix, and their head football coach Dana Zupke, publicly denied using any information that was sent out by this alleged coach. Well, Pinnacle comes up and plays Eastside Catholic this week. It's something that it's a bit of an off the field distraction for this game. But going back to the story, is there a gray area when it comes to sharing information and sharing game plans? And Dan, I know you've spent time doing this professionally. What is that process like? And how are game plans and how is information traded between coaches?
Well, the coaching fraternity is a really small, tight-knit group within each sport, it seems. And you're going to have your close confidants and friends within that network, and you want your group of coaches that you're connected with or maybe mentored by or mentor of tours for them, you want to support them and help guide them and prepare them when you're asked. So, you know, the sharing of information happens at all levels of sports, and I think that's something that has to be to continue to happen, because that's how coaches improve, that's how players improve. I think where things would cross the line in a situation like this is if somebody, which is what it sounds like, steals the information and gives an actual game plan to a potential opponent. That right there, in my opinion, is crossing the line. But at the same time, doesn't mean that coach who receives it does anything with it. Because again, there's always sharing of information, and then the coach who's doing the preparing has to disseminate what is actually important to them, both personnel-wise as well as game planning as a team-wise. An example that goes back to, you know, my college and my NBA days would be, as a player, you would always get a condensed player and scouting report for your opponent as compared to the coach's scouting report. The scouting report that a player would get, you would have your name on it, and you would be responsible for that scouting report. If by chance you left it in a gym or you lost it somewhere and it came back, and the staff were to find out that you lost it, especially as a college kid, oh boy, you're not going to be happy. You're going to have a stern talking to, maybe some extra lines or whatnot. At the professional level, it works the same way. If you were to leave a scouting report, typically there would be a financial fine, depending on the organization. But at the professional level, it's funny because everybody knows what everybody runs. Everybody knows strengths and weaknesses. It all comes down to, again, how the opponent disseminates the information and then wants to attack their opponent, both offensively and defensively. So, you know, I think this is a really interesting story, but I think a lot of it just honestly comes down to, you know, did the coach or the staff that was receiving the information, did they request it, or was this a coach who just kind of went out on his own because maybe he had a vendetta against a coach or a couple coaches and he wanted to help that coach's opponents?
The school district down there that Mountain Point is a part of is doing a 3-week long investigation into this, and they've found hundreds of emails that have been leaked over the last 2 years. It's interesting that, yeah, Todd, have you ever, I mean, in your 24 plus years of covering high school sports, have you ever heard of something like this? And, you know, it seems to be a bit of an explosive story coming out of the high school ranks, something that you don't normally see at that level.
Oh, not even close. I mean, gamesmanship, especially when it comes to scouting reports, exchanging film, you know, coaches within a league giving a scouting report to coaches outside that league. I mean, I've seen all that stuff. I've seen the tension it creates. I've seen the bad blood it creates. But this is something extreme all on its own. This is basically selling out the goods. It's cheating. I mean, whatever you want to label it, label it. And I think a story like this, you know, the question that needs to be answered is why? Why would an assistant coach do that to the kids that he coaches? I don't understand, unless he was being paid or he was mad at the head coach or some quarterback or running back, you know, got him angry. I mean, I don't know. I think that's the question that needs to be answered down in Arizona, because it's such a bizarre occurrence. Again, I've never heard this around the state of Washington, but I've never heard this around the country before. Before it broke here in the last few days, it's very, very bizarre.
Yeah, it's a constantly developing story, and one that is so new that I think the motive is still yet to be determined. The Ahwatukee Foothill News and the Arizona Republic are two news organizations I would point you guys to, if they wanted to read more, because there's just constantly new developments coming out of this. But moving on, week three of the high school football season is upon us. Todd, you and I have been at games each of the first 2 weeks and have seen a lot of really good football so far. If you want ahead and see our top 25 rankings, coaches' polls, top 10 rankings at each classification, those are on scorebooklive.com/Washington for you guys to find, along with tons of other engaging and interesting content. But what games this week have your attention?
It's interesting. You know, the game that intrigues me the most is Lake Stevens hosting Monroe. Now, that's a 4A Wesco rivalry game. It's a game that hasn't been very competitive since Michael Bumpus took over as the coach 5 years ago. But from what Monroe has done, they beat Eastlake by a point. They played Woodinville right down to the wire in week two. They have a new defensive coordinator. They have a new defensive philosophy. They're not going for broke. They're playing a little more conservatively. It's going to be interesting to see if Monroe, with all that offense, on the flip side, can make Lake Stevens kind of drive the length of the field and get some key stops. Because I think this Monroe team, and we've talked about them before, with Blake Rybar, with Efton Chisholm, they're two fantastic running back receiver. It's a very good running back receiver combination. I think they're going to be able to score some points on Lake Stevens. The question is, are they going to be able to stop, you know, Tanner Jellison and Kasen Kinchin and you know, that crew. But this game intrigues me just for the fact that Monroe has been so competitive against teams that we thought were top 10, and in Woodinville's case, number two team in the state. So I know that Monroe has to go on the road. It's Lake Stevens home opener. You know, I would expect Lake Stevens to win and go to 3-0. But if Monroe I think the bigger storyline is if Monroe can play Lake Stevens competitively, then we really need to start taking the Bearcats seriously as a state playoff, state quarterfinal type team in 2019.
Certainly, and right down the road from you, two teams who are right down the road from each other, Sumner and Puyallup are going to face off. What stands out about that game to you, and is that one that you're going to be keeping your eyes on?
Yeah, only in the fact that let's just see if Sumner can get back to, you know, making it a three team league championship race, not a two team championship race. Now Sumner, it wasn't that long ago. They had kind of the down season last year and didn't make the postseason for the first time in over a decade. But they have a renewed commitment to running the football. They have a renewed commitment of playing physical defense, being physical on offense, and if they pass the ball 8 or 10 times a game, great. And that's the type of team that might give an offense in Puyallup that likes to throw the ball. But with a lot of new guys on that side of the ball, that's the type of defense you don't want to see in week three. What's impressed me about the Vikings in the first 2 weeks is their defense. They've given up 13 points. I kind of thought maybe heading into the season that was the side of the ball that maybe would need to catch up, so to speak, later in the year. I thought the offense would be ahead of the defense, but right now that defense is playing sound. So I suspect that you know, Puyallup will be a favorite in that. If they can convincingly beat Sumner, then I think we kind of view that GK Puyallup rivalry game in a few weeks as one of our blockbuster games this season.
Another game that, with those two games that you mentioned, might be a little bit slept on this week. The one I'm going to be at is Skyview from Vancouver travels up to Snoqualmie and takes on Mount Si. Both of those teams are outside of our Scorebook Live top 10 at the 4A level, but in the coaches' poll, both teams are in the coaches' poll. So coaches around the state clearly respect these two programs. Just a little bit about those two programs. They played last year. Mount Si came down and played at Kiggins Bowl in Vancouver, and just under Cale Millen, three-star quarterback who's now at the University of Oregon, just handed it to the Storm. Won 52-28, passed the ball all over the field, but Skyview brings back the majority of its starting lineup from that squad. They've got a good quarterback in Yaro DeValco, a pro-style 6'3 guy who's committed to Utah State. They've got a dynamic running back in Jelani McGee. They've got some weapons out wide, and I'll be really, really interested to see what happens with this game. Both teams are off to a 2-0 start, and by all accounts, this is, you know, a top 15 game across the state. So stay tuned. I'll be there. I'll be providing updates. Todd, not sure where you'll be yet, but we'll certainly have a presence all over the state. So follow along at scorebooklive.com/Washington. Scorebook Live, download the app, and we've got live scores coming from around the state, a live scoreboard of all the games across all classifications. So thanks for tuning into the podcast this week. We will talk to you next week.